This podcast contains adult themes and language, and some of the things that we discuss may be disturbing to some listeners. In this podcast, we discuss sexual assault, torture, race, and murder. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome everybody to Fruit Loop Season 2, Episode 25. Oh my gosh.
I know.
Man, can you believe it? We're still doing this stuff.
Still here.
You're still here. So thank you all so much for listening. Fruit Loops is a podcast about true crimes committed by people of color and their victims that we don't hear or know much about. Now, contrary to popular belief, not all serial killers are white dudes. There are many well-documented cases of serial killers of color, and Fruit Loops is a podcast all about them. We will take deep dives into the fascinating lives and crimes of serial killers and true crimes committed by people of color and their victims the media and entertainment commonly leave out because, you know, the news is racist, allegedly.
And we are Wendy and Beth. She's Wendy. I'm Beth. We're not journalists, investigators, or psychologists. Just a couple of gals interested in true crime. Mm-hmm. Also, the opinions expressed in this podcast are just that, our opinions. Please send any questions or comments to fruitloopspod@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail at 602-935-6294. And we may feature it on a future episode. Mm. Also, our website is fruitloopspod.com. Our Facebook page is Fruit Loops Pod. And our discussion group is Fruit Loops Pod Discussion on Facebook. We are also on Twitter and Instagram at Fruit Loops Pod.
Now, if you would like to support the show, you can send us a donation on the Cash App, which you can download to your phone, or you can find online at cash.me/$FruitLoopsPod, or you can become a monthly patron through our Podbean patron page. We also have some merch for sale on our website at fruitloopspod.com/merch. And if you can't help monetarily, no big deal, no problem. You can always give us a 5-star review on iTunes or anywhere else you get your podcasts from. And be sure to share our show with your friends.
Amen.
That's right. So who are we talking about today, Beth?
This is part 2 of our episode on Kendall Francois, also known as the Poughkeepsie Killer. A serial killer from Poughkeepsie, New York, convicted of killing 8 women from 1996 to 1998. If you haven't listened to part 1 yet, stop right now, go back and listen to that, and we'll meet you right back here.
That's right. So, how you doing?
I'm all right. Easter was last Sunday, and I missed my grandson.
Oh.
Yeah, I know. I was thinking about giving him an Easter basket and watching him look for the eggs and stuff, but yeah, he's not here. I'll be able to see him in June, so it's okay.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. It's
going to be all right.
Now, you, I believe, are a model grandmother. Aww. I mean, you love being around your grandkids. And it's almost like you'll move mountains to be around your grandson. And I just think that is remarkable. You're like the LeBron James of grandmas.
I can't help it. I know it's a little insane, I know. But I can't help it.
I just think it is so cool, and you should be so proud of yourself. But I'm so sorry you didn't get to spend Easter, but June is going to be here. Fucking
yeah,
lit.
It's going to be here soon, yeah. So. How you doing?
Oh, thank you so much for asking. If it weren't for Beyonce, I really do not know where I would be in this life. I mean, we So we all knew about Beyonce last year because the Queen Bee put out a documentary about her headlining, her history making show at Coachella. And oh Lord, Beyonce filleth my cup and my cup runneth over. Now, Beyonce is the first Black woman to ever headline a show at Coachella. So it was history making. And when we watched it, I remember you even coming over to my desk and I was like,
I'm watching Beyonce. I'm watching
Beyonce. Can you come back later? Like,
we could talk about this damn podcast another time.
But it was so glorious. So she did her Netflix special and I've watched it like 8 times. And I don't need to see or watch anything else. This show and the album, she also released an album on Spotify of her live recordings. And I just can't say enough about how much goodness this documentary made feel. I mean, she talked about, oh my God, and Beyonce, I don't know if you recall when she released the Lemonade album.
Yes, I do.
She
lit up the internet.
She lit up the internet, and she really is speaking to Black girls, and a lot of people are not paying attention to Black women as a demographic. And Beyonce is like, I hear you guys.
That's
here
awesome.
Here I am for you. And so she just put out just all the good feels. And she talked about, you know, finding out that she was pregnant and she wasn't expecting twins, but she is fertile as fuck. And and she talked about how difficult her pregnancy was, which Black women fertility issues are not discussed very much in medicine. And as a Black woman, like Beyonce, I had my own complications with birth. And so hearing her talk about it was really cathartic. Yeah. I mean, the queen bee, she's always honest with us. And, you know, she talked about her high blood pressure. She talked about, she had toxemia when she was pregnant with the twins. She talked about, preeclampsia. I had that. And, it was just really, really neat to hear a powerful Black woman talk about, I had these issues too, and the doctors didn't listen to me.
And I'm Beyonce.
And I'm B fucking Beyonce. She had to have an emergency C-section. I had to have the same because just like her, my baby's heart rate was dropping while he was in my womb. And God damn. I mean, people just don't listen to Black women when they talk about their pain, especially when they are in the maternity ward. And so it was just really, really cool to hear Beyonce actually be really honest and truthful about her experience. And oh my God, have you watched it?
I haven't.
I've been asking everybody. Oh my God. Okay. Everybody, like it is just fun. It is just fun. I don't know if you've ever been to like a step show or a homecoming at an HBC, a historically Black college, but it is bone chilling how much fun they have with the drumline and the dancers and the choreography, and just everything is just so over the top. And that's what Beyonce brought to Coachella. She did her own little HBC homecoming type of celebration.
What's the name of the documentary?
Homecoming.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yes.
Got
please,
it.
Please, please go watch it.
Okay. I'll put it in my queue.
Get your life together and watch it. I mean, I've been trying to learn the dance moves. And my kids are like, what's mom doing in the living room?
Dancing.
I'm learning Beyonce dance moves. Okay. So anyway, but gosh, I tangent. I'm so sorry. But so now we're going to get into the part of our show where we get into our listener letters. And if you'll excuse me for one second, I'm going to
call the angels.
Summon the angels. Yes. Where are you guys?
Hey guys.
Okay, here they are.
Hey.
Well, here we go. We got a lovely letter this week. Actually, it was a review on iTunes from Minerva/Athena on, again, iTunes. Thanks, Boo, for the 5 stars.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, Pop Air Horns to you. God damn it. It's not as
everything
loud as
that can go wrong is going wrong tonight.
It's going wrong today. Boy, oh boy. It's, oh my God. There we go. I was going to say, this is what being black feels like. Like, and nothing goes right.
Nothing goes right.
Okay. But Minerva's review states the following. Literally Obsessed is the title of her iTunes review, and I loved it. She said, so Literally Obsessed, saying, I found myself becoming a fan of true crime, and recently even more than in the past. I was looking for a podcast to listen to when I was bored. Since I'm so interested in true crime and serial killers specifically, when I found this podcast, I clicked on it right away. I never intended to find a podcast tackling the issue of racism, and all I can say is wow. At first, I was skeptical, thinking it was just reversed racism, but it's really opened my eyes. You two have amazing chemistry, and I found myself binging it consistently. I find myself laughing and smiling, but terrified at the same time.
That's our goal.
Yeah. Ding, ding, ding. It's an amazing podcast, and definitely keep up the good work. I'm glad to see that someone opened the discussion in a new way, and I love you too.
Oh, thanks.
And we just want to say Minerva/Athena on iTunes. Thank you for the lovely message.
Yeah.
And I'm going to give you some hip hop air horns, but I hope that they're loud enough.
Yes.
All right. Okay. So now we're going to take a quick ad break, and then we're going to get into the story when we come back. We would like to invite any listeners who have a business to advertise to do it with us. For more information, please email us at fruitloopspod@gmail.com or check out our website at fruitloopspod.com. We're back.
Hey.
So who are we talking about again today, Beth?
This is part two of Kendall Francois, also known as the Poughkeepsie Killer, a black serial killer from Poughkeepsie, New York, convicted of killing 8 white women from 1996 to 1998. Last week, we covered Francois' early life, the timeline, and investigation, and now we will get into the rest of the story.
I was just going to say, this is a tangent, but do you remember the talk radio show in the Bay Area about... And now you know the rest of the story. Do you remember that?
I don't.
KGO News Talk FM. Come on. What, seriously?
I left the Bay Area when I was 10. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So you'll have to forgive me.
Okay. It's okay. You're forgiven. Totally. But when I was growing up in the Bay Area in the 90s, my mom just like consumed like, talk radio like it was a drug, like it was her crack cocaine, and we would listen to KGO News Talk FM, and there was one show where the dude would be like, and now you know the rest of the story. So shout out to Paul Harvey. I think that was the dude's name, but anyway,
sounds right.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know. So let's get into Kendall Francois' arrest. Take it away, Beth.
On the morning of Tuesday, September 1st, 1998, a slightly built woman by the name of Christine Sala was picked up by Kendall Francois, whom she knew and had been with before with no problems. They went to his house where he promised to pay her for sex.
At about 8:30 that morning, when Sala asked for payment, Francois began to strangle her. Sala was somehow able to get free and talked Francois into taking her to the gas station to get some cigarettes. They got into his white car and he drove Sala to a local gas station. But just before he pulled into the station, Sala jumped from the car and ran away. The man continued to drive down the street.
Yeah, and I was watching one of those crime shows about this, and she just like opened the door and like jumped out, and he just kept driving.
Dang! Whoa!
Anyway, that's what they portrayed on the show. That's what I read. So that's what it sounds What happened? Yeah.
Okay.
So at the same time, and less than a block away, Detective Skip Manane and Bob McCready were driving in their unmarked car, preparing to give out flyers asking the public for help in the Katina Newmaster disappearance. They saw Francois in his familiar white Camry drive by the other way and waved at him, and Francois waved back.
Oh, this guy has no fucking shame. Okay. The officers pulled into the same gas station that Francois had just left, and a man came up to the car and told the police that a girl who was now walking away said that she was just assaulted. The cops located the woman, who had visible bruises on her neck. At first, she was reluctant to talk to them because she thought she was going to be arrested. But she then confirmed the attack. She was brought into the police station where she filed a complaint against Francois.
That same afternoon, the police returned to 99 Fulton Street to talk with Kendall Francois about the attack on Christine Sala. They asked him to come into the police department to discuss the report. He agreed and was taken to headquarters. He admitted to the assault on Christine Sala, explaining that he had just lost his temper, but that he had then come to his senses and then took her back downtown.
All right. This is some fuckery. All right. But when the police told him that they were getting a search warrant for his house, Francois eventually admitted to killing the missing women. Police were struck by what they called his ice cold manner during his confession. He told them that the bodies were in the attic, basement, and crawl space of the house where he lived with his parents and sister.
On September 1st, 1998, Francois was arrested. A search warrant was drawn up and signed by a town court judge. And on September 2nd, 1998, shortly after midnight, the town of Poughkeepsie Police, State Police, City of Poughkeepsie Police, a team of detectives, the district attorney, EMS crews, and an army of policemen drove over to 99 Fulton Street. That sounds nuts.
That's a lot of people. That's a lot of force. I don't know if all that was necessary.
No, I don't think so.
I don't know if they would do that for a white dude.
I'm just saying. I don't know. I was thinking maybe because the city of Poughkeepsie is pretty small. Maybe they're all just really excited.
Let's go.
We Woo! Got us a genuine serial killer. Let's go.
Stupid fuckos. Jesus Christ. Okay. All right, guys. Jesus Christ. I can't even with you, believe. I can't with you, you messy ass fucking hoes. No. All right. So 99 Fulton, that's the address, was a two-story green colonial home situated in the middle of the block, sandwiched in between two other similar houses. The house looked like any other home on the block, and although it had a slightly run-down appearance, it was indistinguishable from other neighborhood homes.
Upon arrival, Kendall's parents and sister were told of the purpose of the visit. They were removed from the home and brought to the town of Poughkeepsie Police Department for questioning while the police began their search.
The house was filled with garbage that was strewn everywhere, on the floors, furniture, in the sinks, and closets. Closets were piled all over.
Clothes. There were closets everywhere.
Okay. Do over. Clothes were piled all over and sheets were pulled over the windows. Old food, newspapers, broken furniture, empty cans and bottles, unidentifiable junk. Oh my gosh. stay away from Chardonnay. Okay, because the Chardonnay has hit me. Unidentifiable junk. Animal excrement and garbage of every kind was strewn everywhere. One detective remarked that in all his years, I just want to laugh. In all his years on the job, he had. I'm so sorry. In all his years on the job, he had never.
You can do it. You can do it.
Never seen such living conditions. The stench was overpowering. I'm so sorry. Oh my god. It's Fruit Loops. Where this show, whole show, is a joke. Woo! All right. Take all away, right. Beth.
Woo. As word spread that Kendall Francois had been arrested for murder, people from the media descended upon the neighborhood. Spotlights and cameras soon lined the streets as police went about their business. Relatives of the victims arrived to watch.
Television crews strained to catch a glimpse of the bodies. It has been reported that some spectators ran from the scene, gagging from the oppressive smell. District Attorney William Grady told the newspapers that based on what the suspect told police, 8 bodies were inside the house.
Slowly, the bodies were removed from the house. The corpses were in various states of decomposition, some far advanced beyond the putrefaction stage. Insect activity was widespread, and there were indications of rodent presence.
Just makes you feel.
Yeah.
5 bodies were found in the attic. 3 of them were found together, wrapped in plastic, and it looked like attempts had been made to dismember at least one of them. The 4th body was found in a child's wading pool. Okay.
Interesting choice.
Happy summer. The 5th body was found in a can and was so decomposed that one of the investigators couldn't take it and had to be excused. The 3 freshest bodies were found in a crawl space beneath the house. One investigator called the crime scene a nightmare, quote unquote.
Sounds like it.
It does, yeah.
Over the next 5 days, the police investigators continued their search for bodies and evidence. The crowds got bigger and the media was everywhere. Relatives of victims gathered outside and held vigils in remembrance of their loved ones. On September 5th, the 8th and last body was removed from the Francois home. By then, the first body found had been identified as Katina Newmaster, the last girl to be reported missing on August 28th. Identifications of Gina Barone, Sandra French, and Catherine Marsh quickly followed.
Oh, thank goodness that they've identified these women. A few days later, Wendy Myers, Kathleen Hurley, and Mary Giacconi were also identified, and police made an unexpected discovery. They had expected to find the body of Michelle Eason, a Black woman who had gone missing from Poughkeepsie on September 1st, 1997. Instead, they found the body of Audrey Pugliese, 34, who had not been reported missing. Pugliese was from the city of New Rochelle, New York, and she had moved to Poughkeepsie 6 months prior after living most of her life in Westchester County. She was last seen 3 weeks prior to her body being found.
By the time a search was completed, police had recovered 8 corpses from the house. Only one woman remained missing, Michelle Carol Eason, 29. But she was later mostly ruled out as a possible victim because she is Black, while all of Francois' victims were white, and while the other victims had been found inside the Francois home, Eason was not.
Boy, oh boy, racism just can't seem to, like, It always is around.
Well, he did have a type.
Yeah, he did.
And she wasn't found in the house, and all the other victims were. Although it's very possible that he did kill her and put her somewhere else. I don't know.
Yeah,
it's possible.
I don't know. Francois allegedly told officials that he would never admit to any role in Eason's disappearance because he did not want to be associated with the murder of an African-American woman. Several investigators speculated that Francois killed Eason and disposed her remains elsewhere, but no evidence had been discovered to prove that theory. Eason did fit the mold of Francois's victims, except that the women found in Francois's house were all white. And I do want to give you a little bit of culture corner here. Malcolm X, he's got some famous quotes saying that the most disrespected woman in America is a black woman. The most ignored woman in America is a black woman. And Francois appears to me, just by his dates of birth, to have been a great migration baby. And I wouldn't be surprised if his parents were kind of activist-y. Black people don't really get a choice in terms of being, we have to be activists all the time. It's how we survive. But I do wonder if that sentiment of, I don't want to ever hurt a black woman, is part of his MO.
Yeah, could be.
And so I just wanted to throw that out there. I don't know if the FBI, I'm beginning to think that these FBI profilers are trash because they are really missing lots of parts of the story. They have it's like they have no idea what black or brown serial killers do or their MOs. It's just they're just focused on white dudes, and they're missing so much. So anyway, I just had to point that out. There's a reason why he would not want to hurt a black woman. It's historical. It's ingrained. And I think that it is worth mentioning. So anyway, next.
Yeah. And I would say that he could probably hurt a black woman, but he didn't want people to think that he would hurt a black woman.
Yes. I think that, yes. Yeah. Nail on the head. Good job, Beth. Man. Be like Beth. Hashtag be like Beth.
So Francois admitted that he knew Eason and said that they frequented the same areas of Main Street in the mid-1990s. But Francois denied having an intimate relationship with her. But other witnesses claimed otherwise. Eason left behind a young daughter, and her case remains unsolved today, and she is still missing.
2 days after his arrest, Francois was indicted for the murder of Katina Newmaster. On September 9th, he appeared in court, and a plea of not guilty was entered on his behalf. A month later, on October 13th, he was charged with 8 counts of first-degree murder, 8 counts of second-degree murder, and attempted assault.
Under New York state law, first-degree murder, which includes serial murder, gives the district attorney the option of pursuing the death penalty. Though the DA makes the decision to ask for that sentence, it may only be imposed by a jury which has heard the case. Francois's attorneys chose to plead guilty on December 23rd and thereby avoiding trial by jury and the possibility of a death sentence.
No way! during the time span surrounding the disappearances, Kendall Francois lived at home with his mother, father, and younger sister. In the hoarder house?
In the hoarder house.
Okay. Who continued to deny any knowledge of the killings.
Many people wondered how the parents could not have known what was going on, especially Kendall's mother, who was employed as a nurse for many years at the Hudson River Psychiatric Center in Poughkeepsie. But it has been reported that Kendall had told his parents a raccoon had died in the attic, and he was having trouble finding the carcass.
Okay, baby. Okay. Okay.
For a year and a half.
All right, my little Kendall. Okay, Kendall. Yeah. Okay. are they now? Well, let me tell you. On August 11th of 2000, Judge Thomas Dolan formally sentenced Kendall Francois to life in prison without parole, and he was incarcerated in Attica Correctional Facility. His family denied any knowledge of his deeds. Apparently, the stink of the garbage in the house covered the odor of the bodies, keeping Francois's family clueless to his murderous activities.
Murderous. So one thing, one of those documentaries, somebody had talked about it with a sister, and she said she remembered like laying on her bed and looking at the ceiling, and there were bugs up ceiling.
Yeah. Stop it.
Yeah.
Stop it. You get out of here, Beth. That is no. Are you serious?
Yeah.
No.
So, I mean, the house was a shit pile. And you know that detective went into the house, too, to look for that nail file, if you remember from the the first episode. And he didn't smell it either. So, I don't know.
I don't know what's happening. Yeah. That's crazy.
I know. It's like this house is so disgusting. I can't even smell a dead body.
I can't even.
Yeah, pretty awful.
But wait. Oh, me, oh, my. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's probably why he smelled so bad, Francois, because the house stunk. Wow. Yeah.
The house stunk, so he stunk as well. No, poor Francois.
Yeah, well, until he killed people. Little Francois.
Oh, right. I forgot. Yeah, that's right. He's a trash human being. I forgot.
Well, little baby boy Francois, I feel bad for.
Yeah. Yes, yes.
So Francois died in the Wend Correctional Facility on September 11th, 2014, at the age of 43. The official cause of death was apparent natural causes. According to a woman who corresponded with Francois in prison, he had cancer. Francois had contracted HIV, possibly from one of his victims, and his death was likely AIDS-related.
I did hear that he had two tumors in his groin area that might have also contributed to his death.
Oh, okay.
But I don't know. I'm not a doctor. I didn't examine his balls.
So I also read that after Francois was arrested, his parents had trouble finding a place to live because of the reporting, especially in regards to how unkempt the house was. They could not find a place to rent, as nobody wanted to rent to them. And because the house had been seized as a crime scene, they could not live there. And when the police were done investigating the house, someone covered it in hateful graffiti. I read that they went to live, quote unquote, far away, but I don't know where.
Yeah, I would like to know like where they are now. Where are they now? That's the whole point of the segment. I'm also wondering what that hateful graffiti was.
It wasn't racist, I don't think. I think it was like killer, murderer, stuff like that.
Oh, really? Yeah. Oh, okay. Okay. I assumed it was racist.
Yeah. When I was reading that, I was thinking about that, but I think it was killer and murderer and burn in hell, things like that. Things of that nature, you know.
Okay. Okay. Still not good. Not good.
And you know, his parents didn't kill anybody. So they really weren't destroying Francois's house. They were destroying his parents' house. So
right. Well, talking about true crime, there's a lot of not good things that we have to bring up. So
yeah, there is.
So, what other terrible shits are we getting into? Oh, are we going to talk about what made him snap?
What made him snap? Yeah.
Okay. Well, hit it, Beth. Boom.
So, according to Claudia Rowe, the author of The Spider and the Fly, which is a book about this story, Francois was deeply alienated early on, and in school he was ostracized. His body odor, as we discussed, can probably be attributed to the fact that he lived in garbage. Did his clothes ever get cleaned? I don't know.
It's pretty obvious that his parents had problems given the state of the house. Sure. And according to the TV show Most Evil, the state of the home prevented him from forming normal relationships and was instrumental in forming him as a serial killer.
Sure.
But then he later used it to his advantage to hide the bodies. Mm-hmm. But anyway, because he could not form relationships, he would pick up sex workers. And in a letter he wrote to a woman that he corresponded with for a time, he said that he, quote, lacked self-esteem concerning women for the better part of my life. I didn't believe that I could be loved by a woman because of the way I looked, being overweight and all.
Okay. I understand his feeling. I get that. I get it.
Yeah, I get it. But it frustrates me. I'll just put it that way.
Okay. Okay. Miss Beth, here she goes. All right, Miss Beth. This sounds like something we need to. Hey, are you guys on our Facebook discussion group?
Get at us,
because this sounds like this needs some more discussion.
Yeah, so. we can't figure this all out in one episode.
No.
I'll just say it frustrates me because there's things you can do, like you can see a counselor, you know. Okay. There's stuff you can do, just not. I'm too fat. Nobody's gonna love me, you know.
Yeah, I'm gonna die alone. That was my assumption.
Yeah, but you're doing stuff. You do stuff to help. You know, you're always trying to improve yourself. You're always trying to do better. You know, and you see a counselor, and it just really frustrates me when people say, "Well, I'm just fat, and nobody's gonna love me, and that's it," and won't do anything to improve their self at all. And I'm not talking about losing weight. I'm talking about loving
being
yourself, you know, and not killing people.
Wow. That was a zinger. So, Beth, this has been Hot Takes Corner with Beth and Wendy. Okay. All right.
So anyway, according to an article I read, he wrote that growing up, he thought highly of women, that they were better than men on a fundamental level. But that changed while he was in the army. He wrote that seeing how the married women behaved themselves when their husbands were off training caused that once lofty pedestal to not only crumble, but come crashing down. And this is a problem with men who put women on pedestals. And when men say that they're going to treat you like a queen, just don't go there, because that's the kind of guy that's going to put you up on a pedestal. And then when you make a mistake or something, all of a sudden it's going to come crashing down and you're going to be a piece of shit, you know?
It's just so funny.
So anyway, Louis Schlesinger, a forensic psychologist at John Jay College of Criminal Justice, said that Francois's comments highlight an ironic fact about many serial killers. Strange as it may sound, many sexual murderers are highly moralistic, and they are offended by promiscuous sex.
Offended?
They're offended.
Cocksuckers.
Yeah, of course they can do whatever they want, but women, no. So according to Claudia Rowe, the lady who wrote The Spider and the Fly, Francois told her that during sex with Gina Barone, she complained that he was too heavy and it was taking too long. So Francois choked her into silence so that he could finish. And according to the prosecutor, Francois said that killing seemed easier than getting into a relationship. And the way that he killed Gina Barone may be similar to what happened to the other women as well.
Yeah.
And the show Most Evil rated him a vicious psychopath. His story kind of reminds me of Jeffrey Dahmer in a way.
How come?
Because Jeffrey Dahmer was also very lonely, insecure, and he felt inadequate. And he also kept bodies in his home.
Mm.
Similar in that way.
So I'm going to go out on a limb here. So I'm a big supporter of sex work.
Uh-huh.
And I just think that if sex workers were available to these men who these guys are incels, like, you know, the involuntary celibate dudes.
Right.
If they could get their pipes cleaned, that maybe this wouldn't be a thing.
I don't know. I think it's more, I think there's more to it than that. I think it's, I mean, okay, it's not just the sex. They want somebody to love them.
Uh-huh.
And sex workers are just there for the sex, you know?
But sex and love appear to be the same thing to many people, to most people. I don't know.
No, I mean, you can go and find somebody and have sex with them, and then you leave, you know, or they leave, and you're alone again.
Uh-huh.
So.
I don't know. I just, sex is very similar. It's love adjacent.
Yeah.
And so I would be comfortable accepting sex in the form of love and just being comfortable going about my date and thinking that I am okay. I'm okay. I'm loved because I fucked somebody earlier today for lunch.
So I just wanted to say one more thing regarding his mom and her work as a nurse in a psychiatric center. In my personal opinion, mm-hmm. a lot of people are attracted to the fields of psychology and psychiatry because they want to figure out what's wrong with them. But, of course, right. instead of working on themselves, they're working on other people. So it doesn't really surprise me at all that she worked in a psychiatric center. And we can all be a little bit blind when it comes to our loved ones. So, I'm not really that surprised by the fact that the parents didn't know. And the sister, she was young and she, you know, this is how they lived. I don't know. Yeah, I'm not really sure. Mm-hmm. I mean, everything's confusing when you're that age anyway.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Good point, Beth. I was going to touch on the fact that erectile dysfunction is difficult to live with. We know that Francois, he was slow to finish during sex. And when a sex worker would ask him about it or point out the fact that, you know, he was taking too long to come, he would snap. And in researching this case, I'm not aware of any abuse, you know, imparted on Mr. Francois. But again, he was enormous, which is hard to move about the world and be a Black person and be a very large person who smells. You know, people treat you differently because of your race. I know that personally, people treat me differently because I am a dark-skinned Black woman. And I'm also larger. I mean, you know, I have big boobs, I have a big butt, and so people just assume that maybe I have an attitude, or people maybe assume that, you know, and so people come at me because of what I look like. And I Mr. Francois was no different. And so I imagine that he had maybe a challenging
upbringing,
life, a challenging upbringing, just because of how he looked and also smelled. So, so now we're going to get into our takeaways, what we thought of this case. I will say that it is wild to me that his family lived in this home and didn't notice the goddamn fucking motherfucking smell. Also, same shit, different day. Female sex workers, apparently of any color, his victims were white women. They were disposable. So, and that's really unfortunate.
It is. And I think this is the third case we've covered where a guy hid bodies in his house.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And crazy. I had no idea that so many serial killers did this.
You're the OG of true crime. You didn't know? What?
Yeah. I didn't know it was so common. And like you said, it's crazy that the whole family lived in the home. Mm-hmm. And also, as we touched on earlier, I have to admit that I felt bad for the little boy that he was growing up in that house.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So now we're going to get into how not to get murdered. If you love true crime and you don't want to die, here's a tip for you.
This segment is not intended to be victim blaming. We thought of this segment because I read somewhere that a lot of people listen to true crime because they want to know what they can do to be safer. But in my mind, this is not meant to blame the victims. It's just learning from other people's mistakes. Sometimes we have no suggestions for a particular episode and we'll just offer up generic tips.
All right. Well, how not to get murked. And that is a new slang word that I learned this weekend for how not to get murdered. I was perusing CNET this weekend on their website for some personal safety apps. So I've got some apps for personal safety that will, I believe, help you not get murdered. So the first one is Circle of Six. It recruits friends when you're in an emergency situation. As the name suggests, you register six friends as primary contacts. Tapping the app will display three buttons: a push pin, a phone call, and a chat. The push pin sends an automatic text message complete with your GPS location with your six friends. The call button sends your location and request that you call about an emergency. The chat icon in case you just need to talk. Similar apps include OnWatch, and also Panic Guard is another app that is a safety app. And Be Safe is also an app. It makes it easy to connect with friends and family while you're out on a date. Unlike Circle of Six, it also lets them see your phone's location at any time.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Yeah, yeah. Be Safe. Download it now. Other functions include a timer that will contact your friends if you haven't checked in, letting them know that you might be in danger. The alarm has a PIN code, so your potential attacker can't send the notice for you. Finally, if you feel in danger, you can push an alert button that will notify your contacts and send them your GPS location, as well as a video you've recorded with the app. Also, another app is Hollaback. Hollaback, girl. It will let people share their stories of harassment with the description of the attacker and location, while Spot Crime. Now, Spot Crime is an app, and I have to give a disclaimer ahead of time. I think it is a super racist app, but it's there, so I'm going to give it to you. Spot Crime Plus can help you avoid neighborhoods with high crime rates. Now, again, that's fucking racist. But if you are into safety apps, fine, get at it. Not all abuse is physical. However, not all victims report assaults. So a few discreet apps attempt to help those who might be in abusive situations. One app is One Love My Plan. It's aimed at women ages 18 to 24 who are statistically more at risk of abuse. It asks questions about the relationship, then offers safety plan and places to get help. An app for information, particularly for friends and families of those that we know are going through tough times, provide me with information that I need to support that person, said Ruth Glenn, executive director at the National Coalition Against Domestic Violence, said even so, she warns against apps that promise to bring help during crisis. In those cases, it's best to call 911 or the National Domestic Violence Hotline at 1-800-799-7233, as the response times can be much faster. But, you know, if you have time to bide, maybe 911 isn't necessary. Check out this app. So anyway, that's what I got.
All right.
So now we're going to get into some serial killer and crime news. So what do you have for us today, Beth?
Well, Amanda in our Facebook group posted an article today. It's about how there might be a serial killer in Chicago.
Oh, no!
Yeah, at least 51 women in Chicago have been murdered, strangled, and stuffed in dumpsters or left in alleyways since 2001. So for the past 20 years. And despite the similarities among the deaths, the cases have remained unsolved and unlinked as of yet.
God.
So, of course, most of the women are women of color and sex workers.
Of course.
Of course. They talk about how there may be more than one killer at work, which reminds me of the situation in LA with the Southside Slayer murders, when it turned out that there were at least five serial killers operating in the same area at the same time. And we covered that in our Chester Turner episode. It was also the same time when the Grim Sleeper was at work and a few other guys.
Mm-hmm.
And it took the public to raise awareness about it and get anything done. But that was 30 years ago. So in the 80s, same shit, different century, I guess.
I like that one. Same shit, different century. That's a good one.
But anyway, the murders share a lot of characteristics. They're all strangulations. They took place in Chicago's South and West sides over the last two decades. All of the victims were women, and more than three quarters were African-American women. Many were found in alleys and dumpsters. Some of the dumpsters were set on fire. A nonprofit called Murder Accountability Project used a computer algorithm to identify this particular pattern of murders in Chicago. And Thomas Hargrove, a retired investigative journalist, is the group's founder and chairman. The Chicago Police Department says it's aware of that algorithm, but they hadn't done anything about these murders until recently, when there was a lot of activist protests, things like that. And now it sounds like they're finally looking into it.
Okay. Well, I'm glad that these police are finally getting their messy hoedness shit together.
Yeah.
Okay, well, now we are getting into the portion of our show where we shout out any content about people of color, women, minorities, LGBTQ, basically anybody who's not a straight white dude. a podcast I just found, it's called Speaking of Racism Podcast. Keep in mind that this is a safe space. We may not always say the right things, but we are saying something, and nothing gets fixed if we don't talk about it. So that's what this podcast is about. Also, I wanted to shout out Special. It's a show on Netflix. And it, oh my God, have you watched it yet?
No, I haven't.
Oh my God, it is so good. So it's on Netflix. It's about a young gay man who's 28 years old, and he has cerebral palsy. And he is so funny. But he has like a plus size, beautiful, supportive South Asian female friend, an overbearing mother. And it's just so funny.
I'd never heard of it before. I'll have to check it out.
Oh my God. It is so funny. And he like loses his virginity to a sex worker. And, you know, and the sex worker's like, you're way more flexible than my other cerebral palsy like clients. Like it is so good. It's the first season, but it's excellent. And I went to high school with actually one of the actors who's show.
Cool.
So if you didn't know about Jason Michael Snow, on Netflix, it's a really good show. And I think, I don't know, people with cerebral palsy don't get as much accolades or attention.
No, they don't.
And it's a really cool show. It's dope writing. It's innovative. It's nothing we've ever seen before. So check it out.
All right.
On Netflix. Yeah. Where can the people find us, Beth?
Our website is fruitloopspod.com. Our Facebook page is Fruit Loops Pod. And our discussion group is Fruit Loops Pod Discussion on Facebook. We are also on Twitter and Instagram at Fruit Loops Pod. And links to our sources will be in our footnotes. If you want to support the show, you can send us a donation on the Cash App, which you can download to your phone, or you can find online at cash.me/$FruitLoopsPod, or you can become a monthly patron through our Podbean patron page. This will help us pay for things like our website and pod hosting. There's no minimum and no commitment. Even a dollar would help. And we also have merch on our website now at fruitloopspod.com/merch.
All right. So I was trying to get my hip hop air horn to work, but it's not working. So if you donate to our Cash App, then maybe I could afford a good soundboard. Jesus fucking Christ. Anyway, it's not working. This is a weekly podcast and new episodes drop every Thursday. So until next time, look alive, guys. It's crazy out there.